Our next item, I just want to make sure that Ken Cummings is virtually available. I know you were on earlier. Okay, great. Here.
I am.
Okay, then this next item, as was mentioned, is to deal with the Doug Graff will set this up, but this is an action item to deal with the Rangeland Association budget. So, Doug, are you ready to start? We can actually see him, I think.
Okay, good morning. Chair Imason, members of the board, State Forest Authority, here to speak on fire protection budgets. And I too would like to acknowledge and thank the opening comments today, bringing a sense of humanity to what we're dealing with as a society today, both from State Forester and the board. Really appreciate that humanity in the work we do every day. So thank you all for that leadership. Today, I'm joined with Ron Graham, who will present the protection budgets. He participated. Deputy Chief Ron Graham will join me. For the record, my name is Doug Graff, Chief of Fire Protection for the Department of Forestry. My apologies. He'll join me in the annual budget presentation. He joined all the local protection district budgets, so has firsthand knowledge of that work. He'll close with the recommendation to approve the budgets as presented and worked through at the local districts, given the process that Peter outlined this morning. We'll also we'll close before decision for the board, but with a handoff to Ken Cummins, who is the chair of the Emergency Fire Cost Committee. Ken Cummins is truly a leader in Oregon's natural resources and has been for many decades in service to this board and this organization. In our fiduciary responsibility with landowner dollars as a partner in Oregon's fire protection system, he serves as the chair of that committee appointed by this board. And it's a really good time to hear his voice as we consider the budgets this year and the role that those budgets play in protecting large fire costs by providing an adequate level of protection to protect against catastrophic wildfire that costs the state in many ways, including dollars, but smoke impacts and economic impacts also. So Ken will close this presentation with that. I would turn to Ron Graham to carry us forward.
All right. Thank you, Doug. Good morning, Chair Imason, members of the board, State Forester and Daugherty. For the record, I'm Ron Graham. I serve as the Deputy Chief of the Fire Protection Division. You can go to the next slide, please. All right. What we're here to talk about today is the requirement under Oregon Revised Statute 477265. That requires the Board of Forestry to annually review the forest protection district budgets and pass final approval on all district budgets, including the prorated acreage assessment rates. I'll be walking through these district budgets, as Doug said, after attending all of the Forest Protective Association meetings and budgets, which their boards approve these budgets for the adequate level of protection. We've got three basic levels of our budgets that make up our fire protection system. The base level of fire protection, and that's really what we call our fire department, the backbone of our system. This is what provides the adequate level of protection to enable an effective and safe initial attack. And that's what we'll be presenting today are these fiscal budgets. We also have our severity budgets and our severity statewide resources through a special purpose appropriation. These include air tankers, single engine air tankers, helicopters, our hand crews and extra detection aircraft. These bolster and support that base level of protection when resources are not adequate enough to stop fires. And then also our large fire funding system, and that's the extra fire, large fire costs All three of these are a complex and intertwined connected system that includes landowner dollars, general fund, and at the large fire funding level includes FEMA reimbursements and potential payouts from the catastrophic insurance policy. Again, today we're talking about the base level of protection and those budgets in our fiscal 21 budgets. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, you know, this is a complex funding partnership. It's based on over a century old system, well over a century old, very unique in the country as far as, you know, state forestry systems go and their budgets and, you know, the involvement of landowner dollars. Part of this is what makes this a very complete and coordinated fire protection system, includes our federal partners as well. This is all started through a state office here in Salem headquarters budget development. We kicked that off in January of each year, developing that level of our budget. We include area budgets for our area fire protection, and then down to the district level, these unit budgets all make up the whole entire complete and coordinated system. And again, very complex. You can see it's very involved and very complete and coordinated. You know, the general breakdown of this budget is, as you can see, private landowners and general fund share a portion of that, and then public landowners through the assessments, you know, share a portion of that too. The private landowner contribution, as you can see, is made up of a match of, you know, general fund as well. Go on to the next slide, please. So again, you know, the district develop their fiscal budgets based on, you know, when the headquarters budget is completed, area budgets are completed, and district budget committees meet, you know, usually starting in late January, February, and go through their budget development process, all towards, you know, developing a budget for an adequate level of protection. This is a very, again, involved process. The districts look at their previous year's spending and previous year's capability to meet our key performance measures to keep fires at 98%, you know, 10 acres or less, and what are the needs to have that adequate level of protection. Each of these are reviewed and guided by the association boards. The boards meet in April. Those meetings that Doug Graff referenced that I attended, all those were held virtually as well. All of those were approved by those local boards. And again, this establishes the adequate level of protection and the associated costs. Our legislative policy determines the ratio, as I mentioned, and that's in Oregon Revised Statute 477230. Next slide, please. So what we protect with that base level of fire protection is roughly 16.2 million acres, or half of the forested land in Oregon. This is a mixture of private land and federal land. Some county acres protected in that, a complete mix of that. We do this through the 12 fire protection districts, as we mentioned, and we do this with this robust initial attack and extended attack capacity through fire engines and seasonal firefighters staffing those, district contracted helicopters, initial attack heavy equipment and dozers, and, you know, our frontline seasonal firefighters, the core of our on-the-ground firefighting resources. And then again, you know, that is bolstered through that severity program as well. But again, here focused today on the base level of protection. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, kind of uniquely this year, the association meetings were all held remotely, virtually, utilizing the same technology that we're utilizing here today. That way we could comply with the governor's executive orders and social distancing guidelines. I have to say I was very impressed with the nature of the meetings, how well they were organized and facilitated and attended. You know, it's unfortunate that we were not able to do those meetings in person and have those, you know, one-on-one relationships there. But again, very, very well done and attended. And, you know, business took place as normal and as required. So end result was all of the associations recommended approval of their fiscal budgets. There was a lot of conversation, as there usually is, around the adequate level of protection, you know, the rising cost of protection, and that's just occurring nationally as costs continue to rise associated with crews and equipment and personnel and aircraft costs and insurance, all of those things that go into it. Next slide, please. After those association meeting took place, as State Forester Daugherty had mentioned, the governor requested that agencies do a budget reduction plan. I won't dwell on this too long, as State Forester Daugherty covered this very well, but ultimately what you see before you is the Fire Protection Division portion of the general fund budget reduction, what that equates to in an other fund cut as well. And the fact that right now, as State Forester Daugherty had mentioned, there has been no final decision made on budgetary adjustments or reductions. Ultimately, what we're presenting to you today are the budgets as approved by the Forest Protection Associations for the adequate level of protection. Pending any final decision on budget reductions, it could require us to come back before the board after developing a second or new fire protection fiscal budget for your approval. Next slide, please. Ultimately, what we have as referenced in your packet, you have agenda item 2, attachment 1, that displays the forest protection budget summary by district and by area. Ultimately, we see an overall increase of 4.9% statewide. That's very much in line with the increases we've seen over past years. So at this time, the department recommends the board approve all the fiscal year 2021 district and association protection budgets as presented in agenda item 2, including attachment 1. I'll stop there for any questions or turn it over to Chief Doug Graff.
I don't see any hands raised, meaning no questions at this point.
Thank you, Ron. At this time, then, we have invited guests, Chair, as highlighted previously, and that's Ken Cummins online. I do see Ken now, so I would ask Ken to join for a comment.
All right. Thank you. You hear me okay?
Yep.
Good. Well, good morning, Chair Imason, members of the board, State Forester Peter Daugherty. For the record, my name is Kenneth Cummings, Chair of the Emergency Fire Cost Committee. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. The entire committee appointed by the Board of Forestry takes their fiduciary responsibilities in overseeing the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund extremely seriously. It is within this context we offer the following comments. We at the EFCC completely support the budgets presented before you today for the following reasons. The current budgets allow for adequate level of protection across all ODF jurisdictions and additionally hold the following five areas in check. First of all, our health. These current budgets as proposed will minimize the impacts of large fires that have direct and dire impacts on our health. One less large fire will minimize long periods of smoke and characterize an already frustrated public around increased health concerns. Additionally, reduce potential loss to critical municipal water and drinking supplies. While not an ODF fire in 2017, the Eagle Creek fire could have easily burned the Bull Creek watershed down. We'll minimize increasing concerns around climate change. The smoke created by that same fire in 4 weeks was equal to all of the people in Portland not driving a car for a year. These budgets will save lives and potentially minimize loss of community infrastructure, like in 2018 in the campfire in Paradise, California. Again, not an ODF fire, but in 2018, the Klondike fire in Southern Oregon threatened the towns of Selma, O'Brien, Cave Junction, and Grants Pass. Another area that it keeps in check will be the general fund. Current budgets allow for maximum focus on initial attack to keep fires small. Fire suppression costs, as you've already heard, will increase this fire season regardless of the number of large fires due to all the extra requirements in keeping workers safe during this pandemic. Oregon's complete and coordinated system has benefited in the past from multi-agency emergency response teams coming to Oregon to help when needed. We are now in an unprecedented time of competing catastrophes. In the face of COVID-19, there will be a more limited and less timely response from national and even international resources as everyone in the world is responding to concerns about how to deploy teams, travel to and from a fire, and manage the all-around safety in regards to firefighters. Because of the pandemic, there are indications that a large number of firefighters connected to these teams will not respond when asked to participate. This alone might create a huge gap in the potential workforce available to fight fires on an extended basis when they become large. Additionally, beyond COVID-19, researchers are already predicting a hurricane season of, quote, above average intensity. And prior to Monday, June 1st, the beginning of hurricane season, there have already been two. This situation alone could seriously limit the ability of some multi-agency emergency response teams coming to Oregon to help. The threat to the general fund could easily be 2 to 3 times the average net fire costs that we've experienced from an average of $20 million annually to more recently over $40 million. The most rigorous approach to mitigating north of $100 million risk is to make sure that ODF has the budget and the resources to aggressively suppress fires and take advantage of the contributions of landowners and other agencies in Oregon's complete and coordinated system. 3, firefighter safety and effectiveness. These current budgets will provide for staffing levels to meet the current need. In 2019, the Governor's Wildfire Council identified many opportunities for improvement to shore up ODF's resources over time so people are not worn out and experiencing safety and effectiveness problems. Over the last 10 years, the department has been operating with personnel on an overtime basis and the use of retirees that equates to acting like they have 55 more staff than actually exist. As this situation continues, leadership will be faced with tough decisions that either limit response time and effectiveness or take unprecedented risks of deploying people who are overworked, overtired, and could incur large safety issues. 4, a public and private partnership with landowners. Private landowners match the general fund contributions, as you just heard from Ron, dollar for dollar, providing great leverage. In addition, landowners contribute significant fire protection, prevention, and suppression resources at their own expense and standby costs that never hit the ODF books. Additionally, effective and efficient wildfire response requires the agency to have high caliber, experienced personnel and excellent teamwork. It is extremely clear that this is what they have. As witnessed over the last several months with many top leadership positions across all incident management teams being deployed on various assignments to help with the unfolding pandemic. Not only are ODF fire team members trained for long-term disaster engagement, they are highly respected for their tenacity and patience in the midst of chaos. Together, landowners and ODF staff make an undeniably effective fire suppression force. These proposed budgets ensure longevity of that fundamental expertise and minimize jeopardizing effective response during this fire season. And lastly, access to insurance markets. These current budget proposals underwrite the collective commitment we have made to our partners at Lloyd's of London and maintains a positive standing for Oregon regardless of the outcome of this fire season. As you know, the Lloyd's of London policy is a $25 million policy in excess of $50 million in large fire costs for one single season. That policy is in place. Long-term relationships with underwriters, a stellar record at ODF of being effective at keeping fires small, along with all the many other facets of Oregon's unique, complete, and coordinated system, all of those contribute to maintaining this policy. The cornerstone of the risk mitigation plan for Oregon is a fully funded base level budget, which meets an adequate level of protection across all districts in Oregon. ODF professionals and landowners sit down every year and painstakingly deliberate and ensure that these criteria are met across the landscape they manage. If initial attack were compromised and more large fires occurred, it would severely jeopardize Oregon's integrity in the insurance markets. A practical review of a partial or full claim on the insurance policy which revealed Oregon leadership knowingly did not completely fund the base level of fire budgets as proposed, could be disastrous. In fact, that outcome could be the end of a 40-year relationship that has successfully maintained a one-of-a-kind policy in the world. Overall, by any calculation, this is a critical time to fully fund budgets that maintain capacity and resources to allow for the highest degree of success possible. In summary, fully funded budgets as proposed will, number one, offset the drain on Oregon's beleaguered economy by saving substantial general fund dollars. Number two, reduce impacts to losses in private timberland assets and the environment. Number three, and most importantly, protect the health of all Oregonians. Thank you for your attention and the opportunity to comment today.
And thank you very much for those comments. And we also received comments from others in writing, which we appreciate. And I see a couple of hands up. I think we also have, Hillary, do we have public comment on this issue as well?
We do. We have one joining us today, Mr. Moran. Feel free to let me know if you want to take care of those after the questions.
Good morning.
You have a question?
Okay. Mr. Moran?
I see some hands up. I'm just trying to see to call on folks. Cindy, Brenda, Jim, you have questions?
Yeah, what order do you want us to go in?
Why don't we just do it in that order, Cindy, Brenda, Jim?
Okay, sounds good. Thank you both for your presentations. I've got sort of two questions. One is looking at the proposed budget percent changes across the regions. There's some widely different regional changes in budget. Some going up by significant amount, some going down by significant amount. Was wondering if you could talk to us a little bit about how the change allocations were determined as my first question.
Doug Graff here, Chief of Fire Protection. There is a range typically on an annual basis depending on carryover and the intensity fire conditions experienced district by district. And what you see often relative to the grazing lands, you see more dramatic changes there because any changes in fire conditions on that landscape has greater impact relative to the small acreages associated with that landscape. So a slight additional cost for fire protection on those lands swings significantly because you have less acreages associated with those grazing lands. Ron, do you have any further detail that you would like to add?
Yes, thanks, Chief Graff. All I would add is that, you know, these budgets are impacted by the actual cost computation from our fiscal 2019 budgets. That is the 2018 fire season. And as you recall, 2018 fire season was a fairly intense fire season. So what you'll see is in districts where, you know, there was significant fire activity, where they potentially overspent on their district budget, had extra large fire costs that they didn't intend on, didn't budget adequate district deductibles, et cetera. Those are reflected in where you see those pretty big increases in some of those districts as well. And you can see conversely, you know, districts that did not have quite the intense fire season, the reverse effect on their budgets.
Sounds good. Yeah, that explains the high percent increase in Southwest. That was a tough fire year. Yeah. Then my second question actually has to do not so much with budget, but with personnel. At the end of every fire season, we have a lot of discussion about how our fire staff has been stretched to the limit and, you know, needs to take time off to recoup. Since so many of our fire crew have been, you know, our leadership team has been involved in the pandemic, I'm wondering if we're entering this fire season with those folks already stressed and overloaded, or it hasn't really affected their entry into the fire season, both in terms of sort of mental tiredness and physical tiredness.
Board member.
Chief Graff, if you would, I can kick off if you would, Doug. You know, there's two sides to this, certainly. On an individual basis, we have seen the pandemic and the deployments in support of the state's Emergency Coordination Center take an impact on people individually. Everybody has experienced it differently. On the positive side, though, you know, having our three incident management teams deploy in support of that provided a valuable training experience. We had to cancel our incident management team training as a result of the pandemic. And, you know, this was really great on-the-job training for our incident management teams. We strategically made sure that, you know, as our teams rotated through those assignments, we did one team rotation each, and then we stood our teams down so that they could rest and recover for fire season, you know, anticipating possibly, you know, what we'll hear later today is an active fire season. So again, individually, we see some impacts. Everybody experiences and deals with things differently. But I think the overall health, I would summarize, for our incident management teams and folks going into the season is very good.
Well, thanks. Yes, Ron and Doug, assuming that we get some guidance regarding budget reductions and a revised budget is needed, what's the process that will be taken to develop that revised budget?
Ron, could you detail the budget exercise to date?
Yeah, so, you know, we've actually, you know, gone through the budget exercise at the headquarters level, the district level, and identified where we would, you know, take those general fund reductions. What it would require ultimately is dependent on the outcome and what, you know, final percentages. We basically have to do a very abbreviated budget development process, starting with our headquarters budget, identify the exact dollar amount and when where that's taken, and filter that down through to the district associations. And then ultimately, whether it requires a special board meeting or, you know, when we can approach the board, depending on the timing of all of that, ultimately it would require some kind of approval by the board based on, you know, the new budget that's presented. It would be very abbreviated as far as, you know, as I mentioned, the districts and the process, because we know the target dollar amounts. And so what we ultimately have to do is then figure out what does that do for the rate, and the discussion on, you know, what level of protection do districts, you know, still want to provide.
So the associations will be involved in those discussions then?
Absolutely. They've been involved with the entire process as far as the budget reduction plan that was required by the governor's office, and they would be required to be participate in, you know, whatever the final outcome is.
Jim.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know if I'm jumping the gun here, but I, you know, assuming that we approve this budget, I'm concerned, obviously about the upcoming possible reduction. And I think there's, you know, obviously there's very strong arguments against that one, that the state would lose the leverage of the private payments, and certainly endangering this catastrophic insurance policy is a big one. But to me, the other strong argument, I think, you know, generally as different government agencies face cuts, most everybody is arguing that this will cost us more in the long term to fix. This is different. This will likely cost us way more in the very short term. And I think those are very strong arguments. And I am wondering, would like to get Peter's perspective on this, whether both approving this today, but also putting together a letter that would go to the legislature, addressed to the legislature, obviously copied to the governor's office, that would make these points. That we consider this to be a minimally adequate fire protection budget, and then make some of these other really very strong arguments and to try to head off them reducing this budget, which I think would be catastrophic. Thank you.
you want to comment, and Jim, the only thing I'd say is right now we're in the, I think you know this, we're in the process really through the executive branch is the first step of all of this. And you know, my understanding is the governor hasn't made a determination about using that authority that folks have discussed, which is, you know, in that case, she is limited to across the board cuts in general fund. She can't pick and choose. And whether she does that and that precipitates legislative action, or whether she doesn't do that and she calls for legislative action, I think has not yet been determined.
That was my understanding, is that all she could do was be across the board, and that's what led me to say, should we address something to the legislature? So I'm not real clear there. My main point is, what would be the smartest thing for us to do to try to head off this reduction actually happening and us having to face that?
Thanks for that question, Jim. It is a challenging position to be in because there's a lot of uncertainty around it. But what I'm hearing you say is that if there's a right opportunity, the board would like to provide some letter of support for the given budget. I think when we would send a response and what that response would be different depending on how this situation plays out. If the legislature doesn't agree to meet and the governor is forced to take an allotment reduction, my understanding she's prepared to, but she doesn't think it's the ideal instrument for balancing the budget. But if the legislature doesn't act, she's prepared to act. Again, it depends on the size of the allotment reduction. There is some amount we can absorb by deferring cost, and we would want to look at the impact. But if it was going to affect the adequate level of protection, as you've heard today, then that would probably precipitate having a letter to the legislature to urge them to come to agreement to rebalance and protect the budgets, because they're the only ones to do that. If they agree to go into session in time that we know about this, then a letter of support for not taking reductions in fire protection budget would be the right kind of tone to have. I am sure that we can work with the board to prepare sort of general talking points for either type of letter. Should the board choose to be prepared to send a letter to the legislature. As Tom mentioned, we are in the executive branch, and closing a loop with Jason, the natural resource policy advisor of the governor, would probably be a good thing to get his advice on this as well. So I'll be glad to do that after the board meeting.
Okay, great. I am confident in your leadership on that, thank you.
Okay, I see no more questions at this point. Hillary, can we move to the public comment then?
Yes. Hello, everybody. Mr. Moran, thank you for being ready to provide oral testimony for the Forest Protective Association's budgets. We'll be unmuting you here shortly. We have a limited amount of time today, so you're allotted 3 minutes. A timer will be displayed to track your time on Zoom, and I'll inform you when your time's up. So before you begin, please state your full name for the record.
Milton I. Moran, Jr.
And you're good to go.
All right, thank you. Good morning, Chair Emerson, board members, and State Forester Doherty. Appreciate the comments this morning. I hope you're all staying safe and healthy. It's a tough time. I'd like to start off by saying thank you to you all for the hard work, cooperation, and commitment to the people and the forests of Oregon. I manage 145,000 acres of private timber land, all here in Linn County, owned 110 years by the Hill Timber Limited Partnership. I'm a board member for the Linn Forest Protective Association, and I am on the and in Linn County, we are in that part of Linn County that is covered under the ODF South Cascade District. I'm the OFIC Protection Committee Chair. I chair the Oregon Forest Protective Association, representing private forest landers and the 12 forest protecting associations across the state. You have received letters from those FPA presidents, and I don't want to go into details because those letters are very, very well detailed and show our concerns. Governor Brown's across-the-board reductions to the agencies, if implemented, would be devastating to ODF, the protection from fire, and significantly reducing our adequate level of protection, as you've been discussing. As has been said, the state and the ratepayers working together, us as landowners, as required by statute, work on these budgets. These reductions would put Oregon and Oregonians at great risk. Fewer firefighters and aircraft will result in more fires escaping. More fires escaping will lead to increases in smoke, which will have negative impacts on health and the economy of the state. I have a long-term concern for the viability of the department, their ability to fill critical positions on fire management teams, and levels of sufficiency, something that the governor's well surface is a major issue. Taking care of the staff that are seeing longer fire seasons, longer duration deployments, exhaustion and stress, we need to consider the people factor and take care of these folks. I also agree with what has been said with the long-term relationship with Lloyd's of London and our firefighting policy, insurance policy. That could be jeopardized having anything less than the adequate level of protection. Our cooperative spirit and commitments are made annually to procure this policy. I've sat at this table and it's a very, very important one. We're talking to those folks and we don't want to lose this unique policy. It is truly a key element protecting Oregon's general fund. We as private landowners are gearing up and investing in our people and equipment to take on what is predicted to be long, dry, tough, expensive fire season 2020. As a representative of Oregon's private forest landowners, and as part of the complete and coordinated system, I encourage you to approve these forest protection budgets as presented to help us do what we can to keep Oregonians safe, our air clean, and our economy growing. Again, thank you for your service.
And thank you very much for your comments. Public comments?
That's the extent. I sent the board this morning, and we're posting online all the written testimony on the board website.
Thank you. So now we could move to a motion to move the staff recommendation to set these to move forward on this issue. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
So moved by Cindy. Is there a second?
Second,
Joe. Any further discussion? All right, then let me have you unmute yourselves, and we'll vote on this question. Nils Christofferson?
Aye.
Cindy Deegan-Williams?
Aye.
Joe Justice?
Aye.
Jim Kelly?
Aye.
Brendan McComb?
Aye.
Mike Rose?
Aye.
And I'm Tom Imeson, I'm for it. So we have adopted that motion unanimously. Thank you, everybody.